to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 128. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens in his car. That was his car.
Yeah, and I'm in East Bloomington, and summer has actually started today, I think.
Let's hope.
It's a big breakthrough.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello. So it's actually started, and it could very well end today. So it's a short summer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it.
I hope you enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed it.
Well,
hey, Steve, nice choice on the music, highlighting once again the Fender Jaguar guitar, and this time of year, at least last weekend around the Twin Cities, you saw a lot of old cars around it because they do that Back to the 50s weekend at the fairgrounds. I always love that. I always love seeing some of those cars drive around.
Why, thank you, Phil, for the compliment.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. So we've been, speaking about being out and about. So we've been doing a lot of stuff this past week. Last Saturday was the Unsummit, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah, we had a good time. And Steve actually sweated off a few pounds.
Oh my gosh, was it hot in there to begin with?
To begin with, yeah, they finally got it fixed, but it was fun.
Yep. Well, and it was, what I liked to see too was the uptake took a big section of Coco MSP in St. Paul, and Chuck Olson came in and has his real, high-end camera in there and lights and so on, was interviewing people. And then upstairs, I don't know if you noticed, and I don't know, Tim and Graham, if you guys even knew this, but the Onion, the local Onion office, took a big section of Coco MSP upstairs. That's pretty amazing.
It's really nice to walk in there. We were obviously there when it first started, and now you see all of these permanent to semi-permanent office spaces that are being used. It's really nice to see how it's growing and building. But it was a good time. There were some interesting sessions. Of course, we had our podcast from there last week. But guys, I'm sorry, Tim and Graham, you weren't able to make it, because it's always good to just sit around and talk with some of these folks and listen to some of the ideas.
And the free Vizio tablets we got was fabulous.
This was really nice.
Yeah.
So you got to trade in your iPad, huh?
No, I'm waiting for the iPad 3, which will have immersive technology. You can crawl inside of it and be transported to other planets.
Yeah, so. It's the transporter, baby. That's it. It's coming.
That's right.
Star Trek.
Yeah, it's literally, it's almost as though if it doesn't do that, people will be disappointed.
Yeah, and stock will dip. Right.
Yeah, what do you mean there's no holodeck?
And the iPhone 5 coming out around the same time, I mean, could it really happen? I mean, there's a lot of expectations being built up out there.
Yeah. Well, speaking of mobile, segue.
Yeah, but nice segue.
Thank you. Mobile Twin Cities, Phil.
Yeah, another meeting of Mobile Twin Cities, Justin Graman's group that he's put together to sort of bring not only, developers into the tent, but also business folks, marketers, users, that sort of a thing. So I always like to kind of put in that pitch. It's the third Tuesday of every month. It's usually held at Refactor over there by the Bulldog in Northeast. This last week it was interesting because of so many developers that participate. We had a nice rundown of all the major development conferences that have taken place, Google I.O. and WWDC. Yeah. And we also had a guest from 3M who attended the Future of Web Design in London. And so we had a nice recap of that. And then we usually have some presentations or some betas or something like that of some of the mobile technology that's being developed around. So I always like to just put in a plug for that.
Well, I'd love to see, to have heard that Future of Web Design from London, because I've seen some recaps online. Mm-hmm. Looked like one heck of a great event.
Yeah, it was. And it was very interesting to talk to or listen to Amy from 3M. And I've got to grab Amy's last name. I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me. But she did a great presentation for us.
Yeah. And Graham, you went to the Minnesota Cup semifinalists soiree. I know you did a post and a video with Scott Littman, but overall, how was it?
Oh, I think it was good. I mean, unfortunately, I got there late and didn't have much time to do many interviews or talk to many of the startups. But, I ran into a couple that I know and chatted with Darren Klum, who we've covered before with Cram. Yep. And he, of course, had his trusty iPad and was showing off his new UI to me, and it sounds pretty exciting for him. But overall, it was a very well attended event. About 180 people, 47 semifinalist teams were there with their investors and advisors and so forth. And then there was a program after the reception that took up another hour or so that was basically, instructing them about how to go forward with their, the judging is moving forward, and they each have to develop a 20-page business plan. I put it in the post and we'll know by the end of August who the finalists are and who wins the big money and all that. But in its seventh year, that thing is, going strong.
Wow.
Higher quality, entrance every year, according to Scott, particularly in the high tech category, which is the one Scott Littman, the co-founder, is involved in reviewing those, plans. And, I'd say the Minnesota Cup is doing as well as ever. And, 1,000 plus entrants, it's just too bad that, the other 900 and some don't appear to get anything directly out of it. But as I said in the post, I really think they're all winners just for going through the process, because it forces a certain discipline on them,
right,
to be able to say what their business is all about and put it into writing and submit an application to a competition like that. And they learn from that process, and that's what everybody gets out of it.
One of the things I've been really kind of watching, and I don't watch it anywhere near as much as you, Graham, or you, Tim, but the whole venture capital space, and one of the things that happened at Project Skyway, in just hallway conversations, were a lot of these startups talking about how tough it is to get money here. And man, have we heard that before. But now there's articles that are coming out talking about the acceleration in venture capital in the Bay Area and some other markets, New York specifically. So what's going on? I mean, why, is it still come back to the conservative nature of Minnesota, or what do you guys think?
Tim, I'll jump in first. It's a constant whining of, there's never enough money. There never will be. It's always going to be hard to raise money. I think that the angel community in the Twin Cities, a lot of which you don't hear about, is just below the radar. There are still plenty of people investing money, and angel tax credits help a lot. And I'm working with startups that are actively, leveraging both the Minnesota angel tax credit situation and the North Dakota angel tax credit.
Okay.
There's a ton of money up there. There are many startups here in the Twin Cities that are onto that and are raising money in North Dakota. But the fact that you can actually have a single angel who might live in North Dakota, you have to live in North Dakota to take advantage of their angel tax credit, which is 45%. And they can also take advantage of the Minnesota angel tax credit, because that you don't have to be a resident of Minnesota to take advantage of that one. So, they're out there, they're investing. I saw a column in the Tribune. My friend Eric Wiefering did that piece following the Minnesota Cup,
right,
that sort of focused on, we need more money. Well, it's out there. It's just not, you got to know what you're doing. And these guys that are participating, startup founders in these accelerator programs and so forth, and mentorship programs, need to learn how you do that. It isn't easy. It doesn't happen quickly. It always takes longer than you think. But angels are investing money. They're going to continue to invest money, and there are a lot of people that are doing it successfully. It's just never easy,
Yeah.
So that's my take.
Well, and I don't know enough about this. We're going to have to talk to somebody in the VC community, but in the Wall Street Journal today, last night, the SEC published new rules, or long-awaited rules, for a venture capital exemption from registration. So there's clearly steps going on to make it easier for venture capital to you know, start to kickstart more innovation. So let's hope that keeps happening.
Well, absolutely. Yep. And we do need more traditional VC to step up here in our town. That's for sure, for the early stage fundings, that's where the void has been here in the Twin Cities. And that's where angels have picked up and stepped into that gap. But it would sure help if the VC funds would also get more active in the early stage internet kinds of fundings, because they don't take much money. They just need to adopt that new model of funding smaller rounds, the 2, 3, 4, 500K, when they're used to doing Series A rounds of a few million at a time. We don't need those big rounds anymore for the new type of companies.
There's too much infrastructure that's available, because in the old days, quote unquote, in the first .com bubble, everybody was buying servers and building from Sun Microsystems and building out all their infrastructure. And today you can just toss them a credit card number and you got what you need.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard VCs say this for quite a while, the ones that are savvy to the new ways of, 500K, or if, 500K is the new 5 million, they don't need to invest much to get a company going anymore, So that's happening in spades in the Valley and Boulder and Austin and now Chicago and other centers. But I think the Midwest is coming on. I was talking with someone the other day, between Chicago, Austin, Boulder, maybe we can kind of get some of that, central USA mojo here in the Twin Cities and leverage off of some of the good things going on in those places.
Yeah. Well, hey, Phil, you gave us a heads up on, because I have not been watching the press on Best Buy's Music Cloud, and you gave a heads up on the fact that it's not being received real well.
No, it's not being received. They're having some, everything from some features they feel are lacking, and then the user interface. In fact, I think one of the complaints is you have to download software to make it work, and the light version, which is free, only allows you to play 30 seconds of your own songs. So that's a bit of a problem.
Of your own songs?
Of your own songs.
Yikes.
Well, where do I sign up for that?
Yeah, so I mean, I haven't played with it. It was like we talked last week. I got the invitation to Google Music, and it's just still sitting in my inbox because it just isn't something I'm running ready to rush out and deal with. But I'm still most excited about the iTunes Match thing from the iCloud. But I think that Best Buy is trying to get into this space and trying to do something with online music, just as they did with Napster, and I think they're falling a little bit short, but they've got a lot of irons in the fire, so I guess I can't necessarily fault them for wanting to rush into this, but this is the kind of soft start that you don't want to have, especially when you're going up against people like Apple, Google, and Amazon.
You have to wonder
why they're getting into so many different things that don't seem core to their business. I mean, this is a crazy idea to compete with Apple, Google, and Amazon for music.
Audacious. Yep.
But it's crazy. I mean, I'm sure there's a business case behind it, but with all the things that they're doing and in the situation that they're in, they really have to reinvent their business, and I don't think this is part of it.
Well, I think go to a Best Buy store and look at the retail space. It makes sense that they want to at least explore this piece of business, because when you walk into a Best Buy store, maybe what, I don't know, maybe 25%, maybe 18% of the floor space is dedicated to media.
Used to be. I would argue that it's a lot lower than that.
A lot lower than that now. Yeah. So they see that the space is shrinking, and that's a good hunk of their business. So obviously they want to chase, where that media is being supplied and see if they can, help augment their business by doing it. I don't know necessarily if they're going to be successful. Just as I haven't heard anything more about their instrumental music shops, their gig shops that they were doing in some of their stores. I don't know if that's still, that process is still up and running or not.
I thought they got out of that, but I see they still do sell some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the musical instruments. Again, that's them exploring ways to take up space that's being vacated by media, like DVDs.
Well, I think the future for Best Buy is not in a big box. I mean, they've got to get out of the big box. Right. They've got to get to more locations and smaller locations as, you know, technology goes mobile. You know, they started as a stereo shop. And, you know, when was the last time you bought a stereo? I'm serious. I mean, their whole business is completely radically different than those that are now leading the company started with when they started with the company 15, 20 years ago.
Well, you know what I don't understand? Well, you know what I don't understand though is if you look at the fact that the reason to go into a brick and mortar store is if you think you want a product, isn't it great to be able to go in and actually touch it and try it out? And maybe get some questions answered and all that. And why hasn't Best Buy done a super genius bar of some kind or done something where you can come in and they'll show you all this stuff? And yes, that you can hire the Geek Squad to come out and set it all up. But before you get to that point, wouldn't it be nice to understand how this stuff works together so you can figure out what to buy in the beginning?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people do that, but they don't buy stuff at Best Buy. They put it on their list for Amazon and they buy it there.
Yeah.
The problem with Best Buy is that they've got so many products that that are available elsewhere for less money. And that is the crux of the issue. And then all of their services on top of that are upsell, and that's, you know, they drive you into the store with some sort of loss leader, and then they try to upsell you all this other stuff. And I'm not sure if enough people are doing that.
Well, I think you've got to look at also that Tim, I don't think that it's been any new thing that there are other, you know, the same feature or same things available for less elsewhere. What's changed is the technology to find that out. While you're even at the store, you can whip out the old smartphone and find out, oh, well, wait a minute, this particular item is much cheaper either across town or online. So I think that it's just a different paradigm, a different environment that they have to sell in.
Well, here's the big question, though. You know, last night my wife and I watched, we recorded it and then watched it about 10 o'clock, this CNBC Titans program, and they profiled Steve Jobs. You know, nothing new, but it was fun to see some video that I hadn't seen before and so on. But one of the things...
You guys watched Apple porn last night.
Yeah, Apple porn. So, but here's the thing is one of the things that they talked about in there was how, you know, Jobs striving for perfection to get it right the first time versus Microsoft, for example, which... took three times to get it right. And so I look at Best Buy's Music Cloud and I say, once again, these guys are out there and they're trying it, you know, and they're trying to figure out what it is rather than sit back and wait and then buy somebody. Here's the question though, can anybody today, because of the shortened cycle times and how fast everything is happening and how fast stuff's coming out, can anybody afford to wait and to get it right till the third time?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's, cause once people are turned off and it's negative, that's it. I mean, I've even seen, even with us, I've had my wife, see an article, for example, that somebody sent to her from TechCrunch of all places. And she never pays attention to TechCrunch. Somebody will send her an article and she'll try something out. She'll say, hey, this looks kind of interesting. She'll go there and it's not a good experience and she'll never go back. She'll never try it again. And so I'm just, you know, I that's what I think about with this is that, is it going to be something that people look at and just say, nah, and then they just never go back regardless of how good it gets.
Yeah, no, you just have to get things right the first time. And a lot of what Google does is also like this, but they get enough of it right and they're big enough that people give them a shot to, you know, to get the, you know, things together on it. And, you know, some things just don't work, like Google Wave didn't work.
Right.
So, you know, it just comes and goes. So I think, you know, something like this, if you are taking on people that really have a integrated solution like Apple, or someone with huge resources and reach like Amazon and Google with a music service, you've got to get it right, and it's got to be differentiated. And just because you can use it on a BlackBerry, I don't think is enough differentiation.
Well, so Graham, you said something about before we started recording, you said something about the HP tablet and its reception.
Yep.
So what's going on with that? Because here might be another case where they don't have more than one shot at doing it right.
Yeah. There was a story in CRN about how the new HP tablet, which is coming out July 1, and supposedly can be pre-ordered, there were many problems reported from people or companies trying to place pre-orders with the various sellers of the HP tablet, including Best Buy. And it was a pretty negative story about examples of people who are calling up Best Buy and trying to place a pre-order, and people don't know what they're talking about. But it turns out you can do it online, supposedly, and it may all be worked out by now. But it wasn't a particularly stellar beginning for the pre-order phase of the HP tablet.
Okay. But
well, but that's a supply chain issue. I've not heard that the product's not good.
In fact,
the contrary. I've heard that a lot of people saying that it's quite good, but given that it has no ecosystem at all, and it's using an operating system that not a lot of people have built applications for, I doubt that they're going to be able to take on the iPad market, which it is. It's not a tablet market; it's an iPad market.
Yeah, and they can't leverage the Android ecosystem or the iOS ecosystem, so they're going to have to build their own.
Right. I think that if you're anybody but Apple right now, you're going to have a really difficult time selling a tablet.
Yeah. When you say people are saying the HP tablet is good, have there been any hands-on reviews yet? Or?
No, but it's based upon all of the demos and everything else.
All of the spin from HP.
What's happened with the WebOS operating system too. WebOS has always been a good idea, and it's it's just been unfortunate that Palm didn't have the resources to do to get any traction at all with that. So it may work out to be the best tablet operating system, and maybe they'll sell a bunch of them. HP is no slouch when it comes to the retail channel.
Well, one thing that they have. Is yes, they have support for Adobe's Flash, but I'm looking here and it says they also have Beats by Dre speakers.
Nice.
So
I'm gonna buy it just for that.
God.
Just so you can say I have something that Dr. Dre did.
That's right.
I go way back with Dr. Dre. So, well, one of the things that's related to this was on another podcast that I listened to, they mentioned the 1997 closing keynote to WWDC. This is just before Steve Jobs actually came back. It was right after he came back, but he was still an advisor. He wasn't the CEO yet. And it's a Q&A, and there's a YouTube video. It's like an hour long, and it's just fascinating as he kind of lays out a strategy. And part of that is you have to know what to leave out. And I think a lot of these companies just don't know what to leave out, and Best Buy in particular. Yep. They're trying everything and they're seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
They've got to figure out what they're about and do a few things really, really well. And that's the way they're going to win, not trying a million things and hoping that five of them work.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. I thought when you were talking about them earlier, Steve, they need a little retail theater like Ron Johnson brought to the party for Apple.
Right.
And then that super genius bar thing. I mean, I think about Robert Stevens. He does that personally, and it's like, can they somehow bring that to Best Buy, But Brian Dunn said in the earnings call, when was that? Earlier this week or last week? I think it was earlier this week that they are starting to do some things with downsizing the big stores, and of course Best Buy Mobile is what's hot for them right now, and they're looking at trying a kiosk strategy now as well. So you know, so they're trying to revamp that the bricks and mortar presence part, as well as, you know, doubling, trying to double their online revenues within 2 to 3 years. So they're spending, and I was trying to find out what they're spending on the .com. I'd love to know, because they've got to be really cranking up the investment in that if they're going to double the revenues, which would mean doubling from about $2.5 billion to $5 billion just from the online site.
Wow. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, but retail theater, man, what Ron Johnson did for Apple, I mean, it's just so amazing. You know, you know the guy. You've met him. I you know, I didn't know much about him, but I read the whole story. I was amazed that he'd been with Apple for 10, 11 years.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't think he'd been there that long, but now he's going to be bringing some mojo to JCPenney. That'll be fun to watch.
Well, it will be, but also he did so phenomenally well at Apple. I mean, I think he cashed out about $50
million. And, oh, my God, yeah. So, well, and did you read how much he's investing in JCPenney?
Yeah.
He's putting his money where his mouth is. You know, it's like he's buying that stock, and you know, he's going to become CEO eventually here.
Yeah.
On a transition, you know, maybe even before the end of the year.
I wonder if he'll still live in Edina and commute to Dallas.
Well, yeah, he'll probably, well, he was obviously riding planes to Cupertino a lot. He'll just be riding a shorter flight to Dallas now.
Yep.
How bad can that be, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, hey, let's talk about, because I think you put this in, Phil, the thing about Apple and Android users diverging on Wi-Fi.
Well, I thought
usage.
You put that in there. I didn't put it in there.
No, I did.
You did.
Yeah.
So what is, because, you know, I read these, like there's something out now about how 97% of tablet access is all iPad.
Well, and, it's because, they control the market, of course.
They own 90% market share.
Yeah. But I'm wondering about why Android users, aren't using Wi-Fi as much. I mean, could it be that, you know, a lot of them are on Verizon and so it's fast enough they don't have. Have to.
Well, I read that article and I was like, that was the first thing I thought. And then you touched on the article. It's like, well, let's see, the AT&T mobile system sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, if Verizon wasn't CDMA, so when they go 4G totally, which is probably another year or so, year and a half, then I'll do it because then you can use the phone in other parts of the world. But like we're going to go to Germany in this summer. And our phones work, but if we had a Verizon iPhone, they wouldn't work. And so that's a deal killer, especially how my wife travels to Europe all the time. But I don't know. I mean, it's that's the only answer that I came up with after reading that article was it's got to all be about the speed of the networks.
I think that's part of it, but it's so radically different. I mean, it's, you know, iPhone users about 50% of the time are using Wi-Fi mm-hmm. for their data access, where only 22% of Android users are. So it's the numbers are so radically different that I think you're looking at different customers here, where the iPhone is clearly a consumer, straight on consumer product. And maybe Android is just still an early adopter kind of a thing.
Well,
more sophisticated users are using it.
Well, and I would argue to your point about customer segmentation, I have a sister and brother-in-law who have Android phones, and they do not have internet access at home. So they're using their phones for everything, email and web and the whole thing. And
4G?
Not where they are. No, they're on 3G, but still, it's you know, they're not in a position to have, you know, expensive broadband. Plus, where they are, they'd have to spend even more because they're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. But I'm wondering if it's that, because I've been reading a lot about the whole quote unquote digital divide, and now with a much wider cost range for Android devices that people are using them instead of that and having broadband at home.
It could be. I mean, people could be using them because Android you know, the later phones have a hotspot capability baked into the OS.
Okay.
So it's very easy to turn your phone into a Wi-Fi access point.
Okay.
So you could use it just for that. It's kind of slow, but you know, if it's the only thing you can find in the area, it's quite handy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that could be part of it too. It's just the numbers were so surprising that I thought this is kind of crazy. And since, you know, half of us use Android and half of us use an iPhone, I kind of wanted to understand why. Yeah. And I guess it came down to my first thought, which is the AT&T network is really bad.
Well, there's only one other thing, and maybe it's a combination of these factors, but there's only one other thing, which is I've watched people get on Wi-Fi with Androids, and I've tried it once myself on our own network in our office, and then how easy it is on the iPhone. It's easier on the iPhone.
Not
dramatically.
I was going to say, I can't imagine how much easier it can be. I mean, if you're scanning for Wi-Fi, it's not that difficult.
Well, I don't think so either, but yeah. Huh.
Interesting.
So, who knows? So what else is
Wi-Fi?
Oh, go ahead.
Speaking of Wi-Fi, I've got a bitch on my latest purchase, my new Airport Express, that little dinky one that Apple has. My old one sort of croaked and started working, you know, intermittently. And I thought, well, it's 3.5 years old. Time to get a new airport, you know, base station. So
no, it's not, because they're going to refresh it.
Yeah, well, I couldn't wait. I was sick of my home Wi-Fi going out all the time and having to restart the darn thing. So I got the new one. It's the new N, you know, Wi-Fi N.
Yeah.
You know, it's not nearly as good a coverage in my house. And it's like, okay, what do I do now? Do I have to start getting boosters and, you know, repeaters, or what do I do, you know? So that's my little world of Wi-Fi lately.
Well, you know what? Call me, because you and I will talk, because I've gone through the same thing. I've got a new Airport Extreme, and I've got two Airport Expresses, so I can have a huge network in my house.
Yeah, it's pretty geeky to add those repeater booster things. I tried to look into that.
I'll help you out, buddy.
Well, okay, good. It's great to have you out there, Steve.
or you could just get a Linksys router and put third party firmware on it that allows you to boost your signal too.
Oh, that's so geeky! I played with Linksys and D-Link, and forget it. I returned a couple to Amazon. Okay, I'll get in the car, I'll drive to Best Buy and buy a freaking Apple Airport Express, you know, because those are so hard to use. I thought, the hell with it. Why would I use something other than Apple anyway, you know?
Well, you know what, Tim, is two things. One is, I got to tell you how awesome AirPlay is to be able to push from my iPad to my Apple TV and watch stuff and do stuff on the TV. But also, when you boost your signal like that, if you're not wearing lead underwear, you got a radiation problem, pal.
Ah, okay.
And Steve does have lead underwear, so.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, my gosh.
Goofballs. So I wanted to ask you guys, I noticed this week that Twitter is going to start putting promoted tweets in people's timelines sometime in the next 2 months. And, you know, we talked a lot about over the course of the years, talk about monetizing the web and you know, the web being built on free and transitioning to, you know, the freemium model, transitioning to all sorts of different things. Do you see this as yet one more push and saying, okay, enough of the free already?
Well, I think so. I mean, it all depends on how they institute it and deliver it. But it's not going to bother me unless every other tweet was a promoted tweet.
Right.
You know, where there were 47 an hour, you know, into your stream. I mean, that'd be a problem. But I think they got to make money. I mean, there have been over the last 3 or 4 years, there have been several startups in the quote unquote web 2.0 space, when that was the buzzwords du jour, that are in the Deadpool now. They're gone because they didn't figure out how to monetize. And so I want these companies to make money, because I want to keep them around. I want to keep using them.
Yep. Absolutely. Hey, I saw a brilliant use of promoted tweets, just a day or two ago. an event that I really wanted to be at, I had a press pass for. It was the Structure Conference out in San Francisco, Giga Ohm's annual cloud event. And, it sounded like it was just a killer event again, and a very active, tweet stream, StructureConf, C-O-N-F. And somebody had a promoted tweet. Some cloud vendor was promoting a tweet in that Twitter stream. And I thought, that's a very good idea, because some pretty high-powered people were following that tweet stream, you know. And, you know, I hadn't noticed that before, an event-specific promoted tweet.
So they've got a bot that looks for, you know, keywords, and then they can turn around and do an at reply?
Yep.
That's actually pretty smart. But then again, the at reply doesn't go into the whole stream to everybody.
No. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't. But I mean, just reading the tweet, I mean, you know, I had never noticed a promoted tweet popping up like that in a conference hashtag.
Yeah.
Maybe I've just missed it, but I thought, I forget who the advertiser was right off the top of my head, whether it was a big player like Cisco or Juniper or somebody. I can't remember, but anyway, we're obviously going to see more of that, because Twitter's got to start, you know, making money. The investors won't be, patient forever.
Right.
And, you know, we'll probably be hearing about Twitter's IPO next year. You know, it wouldn't surprise me after Facebook goes that Twitter will be pretty soon thereafter.
Yeah. But I agree with you, Phil, on the when you brought up the iTunes Match thing, you know, $25 a year. I would say I probably have maybe 75 CDs that I've ripped of that I own, by the way.
Yes.
In case the FBI is listening, that I ripped, and I would love to be able to have those indexed and part of my whole adventure, because if iCloud does in fact go with storage, so I can stream stuff anywhere, I would love that.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth 20. I mean, $25 is nothing. That's what I love about Dropbox, even though I hate the security aspects or the lack thereof. You know, I mean, you pay them $50 a year and you got all this awesomeness and it's just nickels and dimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And 25 is really nickels and dimes. Yeah. 25 a year.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, maybe they're finally getting it right with iCloud.
Well, I don't know, because the early testers are reporting that, you know, everything gets cut off when you hit your 5 gig cap. So you're going to have to buy, I think, some storage. So it'll be more than $25 a year.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Because
five gigs, you probably have more than 5 gigs worth of data on all your stuff today, right? So most people are going to probably have to pay, you know, more, whatever that more is. It'll probably be fairly reasonable. But, you know, I think you're going to need at least 50 gigs or 25 gigs or something like that to be able to make that whole thing work.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've been paying $99 a year for MobileMe, which is history, I guess.
Well, not people like me, because there's no value to it.
Well, and I didn't see a lot of value either. In fact, I just asked for a refund of the rest of the year because I had re-upped not that long ago, and they immediately issue you a refund, I guess. But yeah, we'll probably end up paying more like $100 a year for iCloud.
Yeah,
but
we'll see.
At least a fair number of people were paying that already for MobileMe, or at least the Apple, you know, the Apple crowd.
Was.
Well
I will tell you.
Of the world will.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you that the one feature in MobileMe that was absolutely fabulous for anybody that you know, doesn't know how to SSH into their computer at home, is this Back to My Mac. To have it literally just show up in a Finder window, have your machine show up.
Oh yeah.
And be able to screen share and drag and drop files and all. I mean, it's pretty fabulous, seamless, incredibly easy to use, and that's what iOS and Lion look like in terms of drag and drop, file sharing and all of that. I mean, it's just going to get even easier, and hopefully you know, it's just going to be continue to be free and baked into the operating system. But here's the other thing too, you know, speaking of that, this whole Bonjour, that Apple has, which is actually an open standard, IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, it's actually a standard. And I'm always wondering why there haven't been interoperability with the PCs and Linux boxes and now with Android. Why can't we mount other machines with this IETF standard and drag and drop files? So, you know, Tim, if you're sitting there with your son's Dell box at a coffee shop next to me, I can just access it and drag and drop files there.
I think you're gonna have to. They're gonna have to do that at the core, you know, in the core of Windows. It's not something you can add on, but Bonjour does work under Windows, so you can use it to connect to other Macs or printers or what have you in Windows. So, you know, Apple uses that, but as a feature of Windows, Microsoft would have to add that, I guess. And I guess that they don't want to do that for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So
okay,
it would be nice. I mean, plug and play kind of works now on the Windows side, sort of. But it's not anything like the integration that Apple has with all the products. I mean that just works. And in Windows, it was a joke, and now it kind of works most of the time.
Yep. Well, one other thing that came up, I think you put this in, Phil, in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal. I was just, as I was going through it this morning, I'm looking at this article on Minnesota brand madness. And I can't figure out how the hell... they came up with this data.
And how did Target get knocked off by some company I've never heard of before?
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it in the show notes so everybody can see it.
One of the top brands in the state, in the country, right? Gets knocked off by Creative Memories. I mean, where are Creative Memories?
Those wacky scrapbookers. They're a powerful group.
The scrapbooking crowd. Best
Buy is up against... Best Buy's up against Post-it notes. So, I mean, that one's going to be a close one.
But you know what? I mean, this is just like, you know, getting a tweet from somebody you know saying, you know, I'm up for such and such an award. Would you please go to this link and vote for us? You know, and depending on how strong your social network is, you're going to have all kinds of people doing it. This is not terribly scientific.
No, not at all. No. And that's what I guess my thought was when I saw this, I thought, well, first, it's nice that we're pitting brands against each other here in our own home state. But also, is this really the best we can do with online polling? Is this, what's the ultimate outcome here?
Yeah.
I mean, do these brands win something? Do they, or is it just, yeah, here's how I'm feeling today.
Well, frankly,
Wheaties is so much cooler than Ecolab.
Yeah, but if I'm the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal, what I care about is getting eyeballs and being relevant and kickstarting conversation. So, you know, potentially this could kickstart. Well, it's kickstarted our conversation, right?
Well, there you go. It worked, right?
And it worked. And so people are starting to say, well, wait a minute. I'm going to put a link to the show notes in here. As well as this other one. Did you put this in here, Phil?
Yeah.
Latvians arrested for Star Tribune virus ad scam. You know, I'd read about this, that they'd done an ad, and if you clicked on it, it loaded malware on your PC.
Sure. Oh, God. Damn those Latvians.
Oh, that's actually kind of funny, but it's also, it's like, okay, so where the hell was the web-based vetting from the Star Tribune folks? In terms of what was going on. I mean, I know they can't. Well, maybe it's a third party that was serving the ad as well. So maybe they can't really go after them. But
if that shows up on your site, I mean, your site's going to get blocked by Google.
Right.
So I'm sure that showed up, and whoever is managing the Star Tribune site probably did see it.
Yeah.
And removed it, I'm sure, soon after. So
right. Well, you know, under the most popular here on the Business Journal that I'm looking at.
Oh, yes, the brand madness?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
No. It says Oceanair Seafood Room moving from Hyatt. And 2 second story. So Michelle, my bride, when we first, our first big date was to Ocean Air, and I'm probably 28, 29, and I'm trying to be Mr. Cool, Mr. Fancy. And
you're speaking when the past check, tense now, right?
I am.
Okay.
And when just with age, shut up. And so here I am ready to pay. And she says to the waiter, say, do you take the frequent dining club card? And she has some card that gives a discount. I'm mortified. I'm looking around thinking these people are going to think that I'm, you know, some rummy, some cheap guy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the waiter says, well, yes, you get one meal free. It was like $25. So I just totally kept my mouth shut. And then this has happened over and over and over and over and over again in our lives. And we're at Lens Crafters and she says, do you take AAA discount? And I look at her like she has three heads. And the woman says, well, yes, we do. You can save $55. Here's the kicker. My wife loves coupons. She loves saving. She loves doing discounts. She's a master at it. But why does she only do Groupon? Why does she not? You know, I loaded the Locate My Deal, the local iPhone app on her and showed her about it and showed her how to use it and all of that. She's not doing any of that. And I'm just curious if you guys have experienced any of that sort of stuff. I mean, is there some sort of inherent resistance to online couponing and promotion?
I think it's top of mind awareness. That's why she's only using Groupon. It's all top of mind.
Okay. All right.
I just think that there are a lot of services out there. What I like about Locate My Deal is it sort of aggregates those services. But I think it's just top of mind awareness. I don't know what you guys think.
I think Groupon has better deals.
Tanning or to the spa, yeah, they have great deals.
Well, no, they have more, they have lower price deals, and they tend to be more applicable to more people. Where Living Social seems to be higher price stuff that you really don't need that you get for half price.
You know, that's a good point. Yeah, because Living Social, I've never pulled the trigger on anything, and Groupon, I have maybe half a dozen times at least.
Yeah, I mean, you can see stuff at Groupon for a couple bucks. So if it's a couple bucks, you go, I'll do that one. I'll get, you know, five Redbox rentals for $2 or something. You know, that kind of stuff is like a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And Groupon does all that kind of stuff. So they do acquire customers quicker, I think, than some of the other group buyers, group buying services. So it'll be interesting. But even though you get a 50% off, 60% off on these deals, if you don't need it, it's not a good deal.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because then it's like the old days when my bride would come home and go, God, look at what I saved. Yeah. How much did you spend, though?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I bought 8 tires and I got 1 free. Yeah. We only have 1 car. Wait a minute.
Yeah, but now when we get up to 100,000 miles, we can put another set on.
There you go. You just slap them on there.
Yeah.
Hey, what's coming up in the next next
not
week?
Much.
I noticed, it, though, the WordPress MSP meeting has moved. Is that correct, or Tim Moo?
See, yeah. It was supposed to be last night, but they had some scheduling conflict, so they moved it to next Wednesday.
Cool.
The 29th.
At what time?
I think it's the normal time, which is 7?
7 p.m.
Yeah. 7 p.m., I want to say.
Yeah. I think so, too. Yeah.
Or say actually 6:30 because they have pizza there.
Okay.
So you want to show up early to get the pizza provided by the fabulous people at the Nerdery.
You know, and if anybody that's listening has an interest in this, this is really becoming a very, very, very strong group and really good and smart people in it. And I would heartily encourage anybody that has any interest in WordPress or is using it now to show up to one of these meetings. This next one is about security.
Yep.
And so I think it's going to be and people are pretty excited about it, and there's a lot going on. WordPress just announced this past week that their repository of plugins had been compromised, and a couple of them, which I use everywhere, W3 Total Cache and WP Touch, were both compromised. And those are okay now, and make sure you do your updates and so forth. But security is becoming not just an issue with WordPress, but we're obviously going to see a shift in our defense budget to cyber attacks and keeping it. and it's because the stakes are going up. More and more of us are mapping our businesses onto the web and the net. And just look at all the stuff that's going on. And so it's going to become even more important. So this could be a really good meeting.
Yeah, I'm planning to go.
Yep.
Yep, we'll be and there. And then
the last one is Coco MSP tours of their Minneapolis facility. The last one is Wednesday the 29th from 1 to 5 p.m.
So go to the tour, then go to the WordPress.
That's right.
And there you go.
And but other than that, you know, this time of year, stuff like this slows down events because people are gone and they're on vacation and, you know, they're doing driving trips like me and so forth. And so,
yeah.
So, all right.
Did you guys see the Coco newsletter that came through today in your email? It sounds like they're selling out pretty quickly downtown Minneapolis as far as availability of, space.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of, and they did talk in there about live podcasts by the Minovate gang. So,
I guess we have to go down there, huh?
We have to go down there.
Do some live podcasting.
Yeah. It's actually going to be, I'm really excited to see it. Don Ball from Coco MSP was telling me about the incredible excitement that Robert Stevens had about that. And about the facility and about the space and about co-working in general. But when you think that Steelcase and Target and Commercial Interiors are deeply involved in this, and there's a tremendous amount of attention on this, I think it's going to be pretty incredible.
Oh yeah.
I'm aware of
some people that are going in there. That's pretty exciting too. And I guess they're officially going to be open now July 12th, I think, for co-working.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a real shot in the arm, I think, for our town. You know, now that St. Paul has had their Coco for a while, I think Minneapolis is it's going to be even better.
I wonder if there'll be a rivalry between the two to see who's better.
Yeah, well, downtown St. Paul still has a lot of stuff going on and is a great place in its own right.
Yeah,
but no the question. Two cities are definitely different, you know, and unique, and they'll continue to be.
Yep.
Did you, speaking of Coco, I just noticed Meg Knodel is now, now working with them. So she's the new co-working librarian.
Yeah, the first that they know of anywhere. Yeah, isn't that cool?
I think it's very cool. So she'll spend a day a week.
That's in
there.
Their newsletter. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 And so it's just going to be cool for her to, you know, not just grab stuff around co-working itself, but also to look at, you know, what are the resource needs of people that are working in facilities like this. I just think it's really she's going to be able to define what this role is and what the space is like and in terms of, you know, resources and all that. I think it's pretty cool.
Very nice.
Yep.
Good stuff going on. All right, you guys. Great show. Thank you very much for joining us again for another Minovate Gang podcast.
And we'll see you next week.
Have a good week.
Summer weekend.
Take care.
Over and out.
Bye.
Then next to me let his engine whine at a small black powered 1929 Model 84 slotted max. And when he smiled you could see his fangs. Race against the devil,
race to win.
Race against the devil,
race to win.
Hemi 426.